Good afternoon, everybody. It is Thursday, apparently, and it is time for the Patreon. It's time for the Paddock Podcast. What's happening? Joined by Brother Omar and Kieran, who has decided to waz off his do. Well played.
Yeah, I've gone full Last Airbender on this now. I think, you know what? I was pretty hopeful when I shaved my head. I've always wondered what my head would look like, and I'm a bit nervous. I come from a long line of bald men, unfortunately, and I can just see, you know, my dad's in the other room. He's telling me to shut up, but I can see the scalp a bit too much for my liking, but I like it for this.
I quite like it.
What do people think in the comments? Let me know. Do you like skinhead Kieran, or do you want the moppy hair back? I don't know.
Two takes. You two talk amongst yourselves a sec. I've just got to correct something Dom's done here.
Dom, once again. Omar, you're down in London still, mate, aren't you?
Yeah, I'm in London at the moment, man. It is absolutely boiling down here. I can't really hack it, to be honest with you. Mind you, I am a heat lover, but at the moment it's just a bit too hot for me. I don't know why.
Shut up, you absolute tarts. What's the matter with you? It's awesome. Yeah, there's what you do. Put a bit of ice in your drink and shut up.
Yeah, I like it hot, but I don't like it this hot.
No, here's what Steve says. I like it hot.
Full stop.
Period. Done.
It's fucking great. Yeah. I had my lunch out there in the garden before. You know how many times I can do that a year? About three. I mean, fucking Jesus Christ. Just enjoy it.
I had a barbecue last night, to be fair, which was well nice.
Oh, we're having one today as well. Any excuse, to be fair. Everyone in the house might as well just take advantage of it, to be fair.
Oh, I love my meats as well. Oh.
You love your meat, do you?
I do love my meat. Oh.
Extra large sausage, yeah?
Massive sausages. Massive burgers. I have tried a lamb burger for the first time yesterday, which is well.
Lamb, the most underrated meat.
Yeah.
Right. Okay. Here we go. For start, a couple of people are saying you can get the hat. You can get the hats. A couple of people are saying that they like the hat. There's a dark grey, a light grey, a black, a red, and there's also a blackout one, which is all black stitching on a black hat as well. So if you like the hats, StretfordPaddockFC.com. And then Club Shop is up at the top there. You can go and check out all of the different merch that we've got. And there's all sorts of stuff going on there as well. Even the company that supplies all our stuff have said to us they can do us like a face mask. So you can have a Paddock FC sort of like neck thing which comes up over your face to protect you, or more likely others, from the old Rona.
A lot of people are making money off that, you know. I've seen a lot of people like, it's just an opportunity because people are buying face masks. I saw in the States as well, a lot of shops aren't letting you in unless you wear face masks.
I think that's coming here, to be honest. Well. Pretty sure that's coming here. Yeah.
Is it coming here? It's only a matter of
time. I think it's going to come here, yeah. And I think it's fair enough, whatever. Right. So Jacob's kicking it off where he says, how soon we have 90.3 million in cash reserves with access to another 150 million through revolving credit facility. That's an overdraft. And to be fair, that is a hell of an overdraft. Is this solely for transfers and can we still afford Sancho? One, I doubt it's just solely for transfers. Can we still afford Sancho? Again, that's a board decision. Clearly not some knobhead on YouTube decision. However, Omar, you've got some nyaws for us.
Yeah, so Ed Woodward came out today for his commercial financial talk, and although he kind of reiterated that about the club being helping the NHS and helping workers, he also did release some statistics and figures for fans to know about as well. So the third quarter fiscal results, so commercial revenue was up 3% to 68.6 million. Broadcast revenue was down 51.7% to 26 million. Match day revenue was down 8.2% to 29.1 million, which isn't surprising, of course. And the total revenue is down 18.7% to 123.7 million. Net debt is up 42.2% up to 429.1 million. So, yeah, I know it's a joke. So, commercially, we are still creating kind of a profit, really, but on the other side of things, we have been losing a bit of money, which obviously isn't surprising because of everything that's going on. But it also begs me to kind of pose a question. Imagine if we're in this situation now and we're losing this money, imagine what other clubs must be losing as well that aren't as financially stable as us. And it kind of brings in debates about what is going to happen with the transfer market as well. I know there's talk saying, I mean, we saw that comment saying we might have £150 million as a backup, as an overdraft. But as you said, Steve, whether that all goes into transfers is up to the club, really. I mean, I don't know what you guys think about it all. I mean, although we've lost a lot, I think we're still financially more stable than other clubs as well.
I think the Premier League teams on the whole, I think, should be okay. They'll either have cash reserves or they'll have enough revenue that they're able to ride it out. They might not have a lottery winner summer, and they might have to maybe do a Tottenham for a couple of seasons and not really buy anybody. But I think, by and large, most Premier League teams are going to survive. What I don't think will survive is Championship to middle of the non-league pyramid. I think those clubs are probably 40, 50% plus reliant on their match day income, money through the gates, sponsorships for their money. And if that goes away, I don't really know how or why or what they're going to do to survive. Because I think I'm sort of mentally preparing myself that I won't be going Old Trafford for the 21 until the 21-22 season. I don't think I'll be at Old Trafford next season. Certainly not this season, for whenever that's meant to end. And I'm preparing myself that it'll be a bonus if I get to Old Trafford next season, but I'm not anticipating going to Old Trafford next season.
I was reading online there as well, Steve. You said, I'm not even sure some Premier League clubs necessarily would be okay. Reading on there, it says broadcasting for United anyway took a 50% hit, something like that. It went from like 50 million down to 27 million. And we've seen teams, you know, even when the broadcasting rights in the Premier League have gone under, and that's down to dodgy ownership and stuff like that. But as you know, as we all know, broadcasting rights are the be it. That's why people want to get to the Premier League, isn't it? That's why they say the Championship playoff is the richest game in football. Gets the Premier League, that broadcasting money comes in. Yeah. But like you said, agreeing with Omar there, we can't really complain, can we? We're, I suppose, the most maybe commercially astute club out there. But, you know, I think this is going to have a trickle-down effect even to the lower end of the Premier League, to be honest.
Yeah, I wouldn't be sure. I mean, I said, by and large, I think they can survive. Yeah. I think they'll survive by not signing anyone. Or possibly even moving a couple of people on themselves. You know, a Premier League club can quite comfortably pick up 20, 30 million in a deflated market where they can move some of their assets on and probably raise that sort of cash. What do Leyton Orient do? You know, what do teams what do Oldham do?
It could probably come down to something like crowdfunding. Last case, but unfortunately, every club's going to be in that scenario, and not everyone can give money to every club, can they? So
I saw that Rochdale have got an undisclosed loan, and there was some talk that it might be an almost unlimited loan from Rochdale Council, but Rochdale Council weren't disclosing how much that loan was to keep Rochdale afloat for however long they need to be kept afloat for. So amazing from Rochdale Council, but mental at the same time as well, because if it is truly, you know, it just tells how much you need, sort of rich dad kind of scenario, then I think that's probably not a great thing.
I wonder if there's a solution in this, and I wanted to get your lad's opinion on it as well, because I saw there was all this talk of the Premier League being streamed on YouTube or terrestrial TV and stuff like that, and I don't know if they could do something like that. Because I think they've only annulled League Two, is it? Is that confirmed? That's the only one that's definitely been. So I don't know. That could be a solution as well. You could put it on a streaming service and then, I don't know, add revenue on that. It's just an idea. But
haven't Sky and BT paid for this already?
I think
that's the thing. They're
going to. So they're going like, hang about. We want our money's worth.
Yeah. I think Ed Woodward as well today, he based the loss of broadcasting revenue on an estimate in terms of how much the actual club would lose if these games weren't being played live on TV. But if they're being streamed free on air, does that obviously implicate BT and Sky then? Or does it implicate other clubs? Who knows? I mean, no one knows what's going to happen really in terms of money coming in with the Premier League. And obviously that has implications on the upcoming transfer market as well with other clubs.
It was a government thing, wasn't it? Or it was one of the members of parliament who was like, maybe we could just stream it all.
Yeah, yeah.
And then everyone sat kind of taking it as like, oh, they're going to stream it all. Like, hang about. No, they're not. Why would they? Why would they stream it all? Like, all the broadcast partners would be like, no, we're fucking not. think so.
And it's very hard to fight someone like Sky and BT as well, because they really do wield all the power.
You're not really,
if you're a football club, because that's where the money comes from.
Yeah.
I mean, what do you guys think is going to happen with the actual transfer market then? Because obviously there's going to be some clubs that aren't as financially stable as United, really. Do you think there is a possibility to exploit in some areas then by bringing in acquisitions on the cheap?
I think United are one of the few clubs that could go bananas with it and could actually put a load of money on the table and go, do you know what? Unfortunately, I think there's going to be an element of poker being played. Whoever buys first sets the tone for the rest of the market. If someone comes in and goes 150 million, Paul Pogba, everyone goes, fucking hell, all right, carry on as normal.
Yeah.
If someone comes in and, let's say, United allowed Pogba to go for, say, 60 million, the whole market adjusts accordingly. So there might be some clubs going, let's just sit on this a minute. Because if, let's say that United had done rough agreements with, like, say, Saul Niguez, Grealish and Sancho as just three random ones to pull out my ass. And let's say that was going to be 75 million, 50 million, 90 million. That in a normal market. Now, United might go, I will pay it, because we know that we will set our team up for next season and we'll make whatever we may have paid over back in year two and year three. Or United might go, well, let's just see what happens here. And if they see what happens, maybe you don't get Grealish for 50, but 40, you've saved 10 mil. Maybe you don't get Niguez for 75. Maybe you get him for 60. You've saved another 15 mil. Maybe you get Sancho for 70. You probably save 45 mil. You might be able to go and buy another player with that and make it a four signing window rather than a free signing window. The reality is, I don't think United can wait. And I think the money that we've wasted on debt pales into significance into this. So I would urge the club to just fucking get what the manager wants and set us up for once to be in a powerful position. They've done everything right in this transfer window. Yesterday, they announced £1,000 to the 250 official supporters clubs for them to do what they want with for youngsters local to that supporters club, which is belting. To go with everything else that the club has done during lockdown, it's been fantastic. And people are like, oh, there you go, club's PR at work. Well, at the end of the day, they're doing it. You can't spin a bad story into a good story. They're just good stories because the club is doing the right thing for a change. I would love to see them continue to create good PR by doing the right thing in the transfer market and not fucking us for once. We've had a couple of good windows. Like, please continue doing them.
I'm very much interested as well. Not just, you know, I agree, definitely. I think a game of poker is a really good, you know, analogy to use, who's going to make, you know, that first move or whatever. But logistically as well, we don't know whether this thing's going to, or when, I keep saying it, when it's going to peter out. Is there going to be restrictions on what countries you can sign players from? You know, you get someone from, I don't know,
China.
China. No Chinese players. But if you got someone from, let's say, I don't know if Denmark have had many numbers, but you're able to sign someone from Denmark because they've had, or Germany even, they've kept control of it, whereas someone in the Netherlands, I think they've been hit pretty hard with it as well at one stage, percentage-wise. I think they were similar to that in the UK. So does that mean, like, you can sign someone from one place and not another? I don't know. And with all these players internationally on the move as well, how's that going to work?
Both of you talk about this game of poker as well. What do you guys personally think United will wait then until another club makes the first move in the market before actually stepping in? Or do you think...
Let's presume we manage to wrap up the seasons before the 1st of July. I think that's going to be very, very, very difficult to do. All right, let's say end of July, and you get a more or less regular transfer window, which is probably going to run from like August to maybe October this time. Maybe they allow an extra month in the transfer window to sort what's going on. I think United can wait a few weeks, 3 or 4 weeks. If there's any movement in the transfer window, it'll start to have happened then. Some of those deals might have been prearranged last season. Some of them might have been prearranged earlier in the year, like Ziyech, stuff like that. But some will start to move. And there's always a domino effect anyway. And that's why it always heats up towards the back end of a window. I'd hope we just do it properly, but give ourselves a couple of weeks of grace to see. Because if it comes in halved, well, then, yeah, you've got to go back to the club that you're talking to and then go and try and get a deal. You owe it to yourselves as a business to do that. But if it looks like it's going to be more or less situation normal, pay the money, get a player, get them in training, and let's actually put the football first at Manchester United for once, and have a good go at next season. Because I think it's probably not a Liverpool-style situation where two players are going to be as transformative as what Van Dijk and Alisson were for Liverpool. But it might not be that much further off. Three players in the window. We might then only be one or two signings away from having a team that can genuinely compete at the top of the league. Before we move on, actually, can I throw out a most overrated striker ever thingy?
You seem very sure of yourself, so I'm interested.
I'm positive of this. Okay. I'm going to say Fernando Torres is the biggest fraud of a footballer to have ever walked the face of the earth. He had two very, very good seasons at Liverpool. He came third in the Ballon d'Or in 2008. He had two very good seasons at Liverpool, including his first season. After that, he's done nothing. He's currently in fucking Japan, where he's struggling to get into double figures in a season.
I think he's retired now, actually. Is he? Is he finished? Yeah, I think he's wrapped it up last year or something.
Yeah. Is he retired? Well, I thought he was still fucking playing in Japan. Well, he did wrap either up way. In
Japan. Yeah, he kind of petered out.
Either way, like, look at what he did when he went back to Atletico, and even look what he did prior to leaving Atletico. It was good, but not great. He was great at Liverpool. In Chelsea, he did nothing.
I don't think he's the most overrated. I definitely think he, of course, petered out, but not just for club as well. He was such a big game player for Spain as well, though.
And what's his record at Spain? The thing is, he
was a big game
fucking
player.
Shit international football, though.
Huh?
International football.
They're most dominant, though. Like, you scored the winner in the European Championship.
Right. 38 goals in 110 appearances. Fraud.
That's not a bad thing for international football.
All right. In a team that was winning back to back to back championships, he's got 1 in 3
with David Villa scoring most of the goals. Though David
get the fuck out of here!
National level is exceptional.
The fuck out of here!
I'm trying to think of overrated. I always thought Adebayor was overrated, personally.
Did Adebayor come third in a Ballon d'Or?
No.
Mm-hmm.
Did he?
I don't think he was overrated. I definitely think he was a player whose confidence was just destroyed.
Who else was Chelsea. There? Do you remember Stefan Jovetic, who played for City?
He was a good player, though. He was a good player.
He was good in Italy.
He was good in Italy, yeah. He was.
In Italy, he was all right, I guess. I don't rate Zaha. Do you count Zaha as a striker? No. He's still overrated, I think, though.
I think overrated needs to be given to someone who is heralded as world-class by the majority. So someone like Wilfried Zaha, I don't think is considered world class.
John Terry.
Well, yeah. I do think John Terry was maybe not world class. Mm-hmm. Maybe not, but he was definitely a fantastic player.
He's got a lot of assists for every
shy game he had at Arsenal, you have to remember in that Madrid team, and I know we had an unreal team around him, blah blah blah.
Oh, I'll tell you what, that's a fucking hell of a call. I don't know if I agree with it, but it's a hell of a call.
Scored goals every club he went to. Barcelona. Yeah. Even Barcelona when he was in and out of the team, he had a pretty okay goal record. I think he was 1 and 2.
Andy Carroll was really overrated, I think. Yeah.
You could only at Newcastle. Play
at Newcastle, yeah. Yeah. Would he score in that season before he moves to Liverpool? 17 goals, something like that.
Speaking of these, I was reading an article in actually in The Athletic about who remembers Amir Zaki. Surely some
cult
hero. Some of the stuff about him, man. He had like 1 and 2 a goal every other game for Egypt, and he came in and he went AWOL for like a week. The week before they played Liverpool, and Brucey lost the head with him, and he was like, "Boss, Zaki needs sunshine." Went out and scored that brace. Was it at Anfield, I think? And then he turned to Brucey and he was like, "See, boss, Zaki needs sunshine." Absolute boss, to be fair. But he, cult hero, maybe not overrated, I'd say.
Ben says, "I was at the Camp Nou when Barcelona beat Atletico in the quarterfinal. Torres scored and was sent off. It was a plop. Atletico would have got a result if he had had pace on the counter. His pace did massively fall off, didn't it? But his record at Atletico coming through wasn't great. And I remember he was highly rated. Coming when he came to Newcastle. I actually had him on Football Manager, like Football Manager 06, something like that. There was a bug on the game where if you put all of your players at a corner and you told them to go front post, the defense would mark everybody at front post. And then all you do is you set your instructions to one player who you've left on the edge of the D. And for some reason, if you had Fernando Torres and you told him to stand on the edge of the D and then you just pass the corner to him, oh, you'd probably score every game from a corner.
They're the kind of tactics they don't teach you. They're the kind of tactics.
Yeah. He scored 74 goals in a season for me once on Footy Manager doing that.
That sounds mad, but you remember Messi scored 92 in a calendar year, so it is kind of actually doable.
Well, that was just for United in a regular season.
I'm trying to think of. Do you remember Joe from Manchester City, the Brazilian striker?
They signed some shit, didn't they, when they got money? Oh my god!
What the fuck was
I think
that?
It was before they got money, you know, or was it? I'm not sure.
I think it was after.
I'm not sure.
I had an argument with a City fan on my Facebook. It keeps coming up every year on Time Hop. And it's some guy's fucking wrote on my Facebook wall something about Rio being shit and Jolyon Lescott being world class. It's amazing. I might even make it into a t-shirt. What? It's so fucking bad a take.
I need to get someone's opinion on this as well, because this was a big topic of debate with the lads in my uni house. And I think we can, but it was a question of Michael Carrick or Fernandinho, who was the better player? Obviously, I'm going to say Michael Carrick, obviously, but their debate was Fernandinho impacts a team more.
And I fuck off!
I wanted to get your lads' take on that.
Has Fernandinho won a Champions League?
No.
Right. Exactly. Here's the problem. Anybody in that City team can look good. It's the same thing as when you've got a team that's playing with confidence, that knows what it's doing, you can bring Cleverley into it and convince yourself Cleverley's a good player. Like, you know, you had Cleverley and Anderson as a partnership in midfield and United looked good with it, you know, for a period of time. I think Fernandinho's a good player and I think he has a positive impact on that team, but I don't think you can compare him to Michael Carrick. I think Michael Carrick was such a fucking underrated player. You know, for me, I said this yesterday and I'll say it again just because it makes a lot of sense as far as I'm concerned. When you have the Gerrard, Lampard, Scholes argument, the argument should actually be Carrick, Lampard and Gerrard, because Scholes was so far ahead of the others and Carrick deserves to be in the sort of conversation as the likes of Gerrard and Lampard. And I think he's such a better team player. If England had actually gone more down the route of finding players that suit a system rather than picking the biggest names, England should have won something. And someone like, he's not digging it. Someone like Michael Carrick featuring more often ahead of either one of Gerrard or Lampard probably would have been a good thing, I think, for England.
I think as well with Carrick, I think one of the highlights that kind of resonates with me is that 2012-13 season. And people talk about like Van Persie and stuff winning as the league, but arguably without Michael Carrick, we might not have won the league as well. I mean, he contributed so much to that team. He ran the midfield in that whole entire season. I mean, imagine it without him. I mean, there'd be no creativity, I think. I mean, obviously we had Rooney, but Rooney was injured for a bit of that season and he was kind of dog shit for a bit of it as well.
He averaged 40 appearances across every season for United as well.
He was sensational.
Yeah.
Oh, and here's just on the topic of Fernandinho. Who do you think is the greatest Brazilian to play in the Premier League? And that is a lot more, that's a difficult question to answer because there's not, and people will say Roberto Firmino. I don't think it's Roberto Firmino, by the way. I would say, personally, I'd say Willian could be in that category, to be honest. I would say. Or even Fernandinho. I'd say Willian, though, personally. Don't know about other people. Definitely not Anderson or Janinho. Well, maybe Janinho, but he played for Borough, didn't he?
Yeah.
Janinho, when he came, was sensational. There's been 16 Brazilian winners of the Premier League.
Can you name them?
No. Well, what I'm going to try and do is give who those are. So who's won the most out of Brazilians?
Fernandinho, I think.
Anderson.
Oh, wow. Really?
Anderson's got four, yeah. Rafael's got three. Fernandinho's got three. Edu has two. Oscar has two. Willian has two. And then Danilo, Ederson, and Gabriel Jesus have two. And then Gilberto Silva, Alex, Belletti, Fabio, Philip Luiz, Ramirez, David Luiz all have one apiece.
There's not a lot of standout names there, really, no. When you think about it, with the class of Brazilians. You would have thought Robinho would have been the best when he came, but it just...
That's just who's won the league, isn't it?
Yeah. True. Quite a lot of people. You can call someone the greatest of all time if they haven't won a league.
Quite a lot of people I know, like a fan's favourite, might have been Juninho, who played for, was it Middlesbrough? Was it?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's what he's before, wasn't
it? Yeah. He was a good player, I think.
He was a game-changing player because there wasn't many of that sort of real creative number 10 operated in the hole. He paved the way for Zola to come. And lots of other players that followed after that, but he was a little magician. He at the time there was a lot of 4-4-2 played in the Premier League, and him coming in the mixer, he was very good. I'll just have a look here. English players. You've seen how many United players in here that have won five or more? There's only John Terry that's won more than three. A couple of Arsenal players have won three. Teddy Sheringham won three. But listen to this in terms of like Manchester United players. Paul Scholes with 11 titles. How many careers does the average player need to collect 11 fucking titles?
That is a joke.
Gary Neville's got 8 titles. 8 fucking titles. David Beckham.
He missed a lot of his career due to injury as well.
David Beckham left United, played for another 10 years around the fucking world picking up titles, and has got 6 fucking titles. So Ricky Butt and Phil Neville and Rio Ferdinand. Rio Ferdinand just about spans the second half of Fergie at United, and he picked up one in 2003 with Beckham and all them lot. Andy Cole, 5. Wes Brown, 5. Wes Brown, 5 titles. Unbelievable.
I often forget. Wes Brown was probably the best, or if not one of the top 3 best right backs in Europe when we won the Champions League.
Oh, it was sensational.
How many did Rio win?
6.
6.
Jeez. 6 titles. And then you've got Carrick on 5 titles.
Do you think we'll ever see something like that again? A span where there will be players who will collect, maybe not 11, because I think that won't be reached again, but even 5 or 6. I think football's changed.
I don't think we'll see that again.
I 100% think you will, yeah. 100%. Really? Maybe not 13 or 11, but 6, okay, yeah.
Maybe not 5, but not make 5 maybe a bit, you know, but like
13 or 11, I don't think we'll see.
I don't think we'll see that again.
Real Madrid, I think only Atletico Madrid stopped them doing the clean sweep in the 60s of winning the title every single year. You've just seen in Scotland, Celtic have just gone 9 in a row. I definitely think you're going to see, because football, on one hand, is becoming more competitive at the very, very, very peak, but it's also becoming less competitive overall. And you'll see players that, like Ashley Cole, they'll probably win 2 titles at one place and a couple of titles somewhere else.
Oh, yeah.
I think you'll get stuff like that happens quite frequently. People winning 5 and 6 and 7 and 8 at one club. Yeah, I do still think it's possible. Most players' careers, probably about 12 years, I would say, as first team players, 12 to 14 years, if they're able to stick around a big team for that long and be competitive for that long. Yeah, I absolutely do think you do. All right, we're in a bit of a weird transitional phase at the moment, but there will be, and there's always been periods of dominance all the time where one team totally fucking obliterates everybody else. Manchester City are not far off being in that sort of vein at the moment, really. Even if you go, okay, they did it this year, probably. But they won 2 and then they won the odd one in between. They hadn't retained it, but they'd been winning the odd ones. That's still quite a dominant period. Chelsea have won a fair few in the last decade, really.
Think the high turnover of players and managers as well, even because it's way much than what in the 90s when Fergie was there, the turnover of managers now is just ridiculous, and the turnover of players. And also as well, when you think about it, all those English players who've won like 7, 8, 9, it's the new thing now. English players are packing their bags and they're leaving to go to Germany or whatever. Not maybe all of them. Not every one of them is going to pack their bags, but there's definitely going to be a lot who are going to test the waters overseas, I'd say. So that's my thinking behind it anyway. I don't know.
Yeah.
I'll probably end up being wrong again.
I think like unless we see, as Steve touched upon, like a dominant force inside like English football, for example, I think we'll see more a case of players maybe moving to other clubs and then winning titles like with those clubs, kind of like what Steve touched upon with Ashley Cole, for example, because I don't think there's that much loyalty in football anymore, certainly not compared to what we saw previously, maybe in like the 90s or like the early noughties. I think a lot of players try and move on and like want new challenges, really. We've seen it recently kind of with Gareth Bale. He moved abroad, didn't he? But we haven't really seen many Brits move abroad, to be honest with you, at all.
Abroad.
Yeah.
Abroad, Jesus. But then when I grew up, right, I used to love broadcasting to everyone in Ireland that I was born in England and everything like that. But for some reason, there's just something about Brits when they go abroad that I just can't stand. I just hate it. I just don't know why. I would just sit there and I'd see, even on holidays with the lads, but you'd go to like, one of those boozy holidays and there'd be loads of fucking English lads, fucking hate the English. Look at them over there. Who do they think they are? Who do they think they are? But, Brits abroad, not for me.
Brits abroad.
Brits abroad.
You see the fucking scenes down in London yesterday? Some guy holding a pint, or holding a bottle even, and saying, have you seen this? This is a disgrace, people out here on the streets. Look at him.
He's complaining whilst he's doing it.
Oh, man. I wonder if, because Scotland today announced, aren't they? They're going to go into phase one on the 28th. Ireland are already in phase one, I think, at the moment.
What's phase one? They,
so phase one is basically like you're allowed to go out, I think, don't quote me on this because I could be wrong, but it's like you're allowed to go to golf. You're allowed to go into like golf courses. I don't think you're allowed to go out with groups up to four people. I still think there's an element of social distancing, but they're going to start opening up like, a lot more to the public anyway and stuff like that. I think that's what's going on.
Have you seen all the photos of the beaches? Like everybody crowding the beach.
In Bournemouth. Ridiculous. Yeah.
Ridiculous. Absolutely.
It's up there with Cheltenham of levels of stupidity as well.
Oh, yeah.
I'm not saying this, Cheltenham happened. It's just as bad. Hundreds of thousands of people. Ridiculous.
Do you reckon we're going to get a second wave then of this?
I think we will because England's fucked. But there doesn't seem to have been much of a second wave across most of Europe, and even Italy starting to look like it can open things up now. Mm. So maybe towards the middle of summer we'll start to see something come out of it. It needs to, but it also needs to be the right time. It can't be. It can't just be rushed through. Although I think there's an element of. Partially, I believe the reason that those Nightingale hospitals were built was to expect the second wave and deal with the second wave as and when it comes. And certainly as it gets to winter, I definitely think everyone gets fucking grounded again at some point. I'm pretty sure they're going to relax it soon because people are bored, but boredom's not an excuse. Just because you're fucking tired of it doesn't mean it gets to fuck off now. I think that. I think they will start to relax it because the numbers are coming down, but I expect there probably will be a significant rise. There's still a lot more people to fucking die, unfortunately. Mm-hmm. And I think that all of those factors play into why we won't be at Old Trafford anytime soon. They might bring the sport back. They might bring amateur sport back. That'd be fucking great if they did. I just think we're a while off everything else, to be honest.
We're still getting sport, to be fair. It's not as if we're getting nothing.
Not really.
But the UFC, I think the UFC is, the best you can get. I think it's better than watching even the Bundesliga with no fans. I think it's interesting to watch them fight with no sound, to be honest. Although it seems to have skewed the judging and stuff like that. It's a bit
mind odd. You, boys, it is the Union. I mean, it's the Berlin Derby tomorrow, so that could be interesting.
Actually,
yeah,
game, to be fair.
Out of the Union, that could be well interesting.
You don't think there was a serious lack of intensity last week in Bundesliga?
From some teams.
Yeah, some teams, definitely.
I watched the Dortmund game and Schalke were just disgraceful. They were horrendous.
None of them know how to defend at all. Like, none of them can defend. There were so many goals last week, wasn't there?
It was ridiculous.
Yeah.
Dortmund have had that all season. Dortmund I've started calling Dortmund the you know, the German version of the 1996 Newcastle, you know, because they will beat you heavily or they'll lose heavily. Mm. They seem to not have any sort of in between about them whatsoever. They just seem to be, you know, massively overwhelming in attack, or someone figures them out and spanks them. And when they spank them, they put two or three past them, or four like Munich did last time they met.
What are your teams for the Bundesliga, both of you?
Augsburg.
I've decided I'm going to follow Bremen.
Bremen.
Oh, they're in a serious
squad. They're in a relegation fight. Oh,
yeah. First, they've never been relegated from the Bundesliga. And
Fucking hell. You seen this? Juho, yeah, with Joe Rogan going to Spotify for 100 million. Does that set the market for the podcast becoming Spotify exclusive? Fucking doubt it, to be honest with you. But, yo, listen, we're obviously not worth 100 million, but it's got to be over 90, hasn't it?
Yeah. Exactly. I'd be interested to see how long that contract is over, because that's how Americans do it, don't they? But it's still a lot of money, I know. I know it's a lot of money.
Mate.
Is he not losing? Well, he mustn't be losing that much money if he signed with Spotify, but I would have thought, like,
I think he makes money on this regardless, and that is insane. I mean, he already had an unbelievable podcast compound anyway, didn't he? I mean, I wonder what he's going to do to this. Are we going to have, like, a Joe Rogan production studio now? It's like three guys working on it. It's amazing. It's unbelievable. Fair fucking play to him.
He just got to the podcast game way before anyone else did, didn't he?
Not really. No, he wasn't even close to being the first, but he might have been the first crossover celebrity that started doing it. That had a following outside of what he did. And he also provided stuff that other people weren't doing. A lot of celebrities, your Adam Carollas, your Tom Greens and people like that, they did podcasting as a radio show with that, hey, radio guy voice. And they did all that sort of shit, podcasts. And that didn't take off. Rogan came to it and just started doing, you know, he was sponsored by the fucking Fleshlight for about 4 years.
No, money and sex toys. Not that I know, but just
he just was real with it, and he didn't censor anything, and he just had long, interesting conversations. Insane. Fair play.
And a good variety of guests as well that cater to everyone, which I think is what's important.
Yeah, that's the crazy thing is the interesting, because I like to try and go west on my own podcast and talk to different people and stuff like that, but the views just die if it's not United related. You know, when we do MMA content, and we've had world number ones and people that have fought for world titles and stuff like that, and they just don't do the numbers. Ultimately, I don't do them for the numbers. I do them because I like to do them, which is why I do a regular podcast with Brendan on my channel. When he's not in fucking Thailand, pretending that he lives in Thailand. But, you know, ultimately that's the game, isn't it? It's like he managed to have Joey Diaz on one show and the next day a fucking neuroscientist and the next day a presidential candidate.
How do you pick up your phone and just say, hey, Elon Musk, do you want to come on my podcast yet?
Well, he never got anybody like that in the early days, did he? In the early days, it was very much comedian-centric, and then a couple of very small-time authors. The likes of sort of people that I could get on mine. And then it grew into people loved the conversations he was having. And a lot of the conversations he was having were like Red Band and stuff like that, where, he's probably shit out big time on this by getting sacked. Young Jamie is absolutely fucking, yeah.
He got sacked by...
Oh, yeah. Did you not listen to the episode?
No, I don't listen to
that. Oh, mate, it was years ago, to be fair, but he had he had a bit of an argument with Joe on an episode, and Joe gave him a death stare, and then Jamie was taking over from the next week, and that was that.
So does Red Band do Rogan anymore, does he?
He's got a few other podcasts that he runs and stuff, but I think it was, I think it was a scientist of some sort that they had on. And Red Band constantly. There was a good thing about what Red Band did is that he would always bring in like new technology and stuff like that all the time. And he was always at the forefront of that because he was interested in that. And he'd have really interesting conversations with Joe and stuff that you'd really like to listen to when they're talking about new technology coming through and things. But then he would have this weird habit of just completely car crashing a conversation. They'd be having a really good conversation back and forward, and then Redmond would be like, hey, have you ever took a photo of your graph of your own asshole? And people would be like, fucking what? And he did that. He did that with... I can't remember who it was now. Yeah, and then Joe was like, fucking do one. I think Jamie had already been working there behind the scenes, and he just was like, right, because Jamie shuts the fuck up and just does his job.
He has the best job in the world, Jamie does. We think Rogan does. Jamie just sits there and presses the buttons. It's great. In a small studio. Unbelievable.
Yeah, I know Red Band was on it a few weeks ago. I think they're still friends. I just think he sacked him, you know, because he couldn't fucking trust him to be as professional as... Joe obviously wants it to be extremely professional, what he does, which is fair play.
100 million. Oh, so much.
There's mad... And you saw... Someone said in the comments there, Barstool Sports got bought out for 450 million. Which is ridiculous. And your man Dave Portnoy runs it. He's like a multi-millionaire now with this cult following.
Wow.
It's insane, man. Ridiculous.
Wow. Yeah, Rogan's so prolific that I can't keep up. And I just cherry pick which ones I listen to now.
Oh, you can't listen to them all. There's just too much. There's not enough minutes in the day to listen to all. And realistically, and you know what's great? Because there's so much variety. Only about 20% of it is the stuff you want to listen to. But there's still a plethora of stuff to listen to. Pick and choose.
Oh, when I had some boring ass fucking jobs, having the podcast on was amazing. It was so good for it.
Yeah.
Fuck it, right? I feel like we've run our course on this one. Thursday, another day chalked off.
Yeah.
Another day closer to the end of lockdown.
What are you going to do when lockdown ends? Just go straight to the pub?
No, because it's probably shut still, isn't it?
Yeah, true.
I'm going to build my own pub where everyone can flock to, because there's a gap in the market, building pubs and back gardens. I shouldn't have said that because I haven't trademarked it yet. But
you know I am actually building a pub in the studio.
Actually.
You heard it first there.
In homage of us being locked up all summer, we come up with a name, didn't we, on the rum down. The Locked In was the name of our little pub, because it's a virtual pub quiz we do every Saturday night on my channel, 9 o'clock, if you want to tune in. On the old Rum Down, we called it The Locked In. Well, I've decided, fuck it, I'm having The Locked In as a pub name, and I'll build a pub in the studio.
We do get one of those automatic beer things where you can pour your own beer.
I'll tell you all about it off air, how we're doing it. Or it's in the back in the kitchen, essentially.
The paddock
club. It's got a bit belting. Righty, thank you fuckers for tuning in. I hope everyone's staying safe, washing their hands and not licking pavements, because that's not advised. But cheers for tuning in. Your support does help us a lot, obviously. And if you'd like to keep the channel going, then check out the join button below. There's extra behind the scenes content, an off the record podcast, some vlogs, and some stuff like that. And if you join the Legends tier will be getting sent out the Paddock merch in a monthly loot box. And the 1st of July, we'll be sending out the away kit. So it'll be exclusive to Paddock members and members of my Patreon before it's available for the public for a good month. So if you like our away kit, which I can show you, I think here.
It's so nice.
Nope, they've deleted it. They've took it off. They've took it off my background here. So I can't show you, but you've seen it. If you've not, well, unlucky. But if you want to go check it out, that'll be on the 1st of July. You'll be getting sent out. It'll be a month before anyone else can get anywhere near it. So if you want to help support the channel and all the rest of that sort of shit, then hit the join button below. But cheers for tuning in. We'll see you crazy cats in the next one. Laters.
See ya.